If you think you can't go from politics to the divide, Carol Gold and Steve Clark are about to take you above the fray. The only agenda here is to empower you to think for yourself, ask more questions, and trust your own truth. So now, the combination talk radio has been missing. Until now, Carol Gold and Steve Clark taking you above the fray.
Hi, and welcome to Above the Fray. I'm Carol Gold. The number here is 914-803-4522. My co-host and I, Steve Clark. Good evening, Steve.
Good evening, Carol.
We welcome your calls. We welcome your input and your perspective as well. Steve, let's talk about Donald Trump, because you almost can't not talk about Donald Trump, but for a variety of reasons. There's so many angles to talking about him and what he represents, both politically and sociologically, sort of at this point in our evolution as a country, that I think it's important that we continue to look at this phenomenon, which is really what he is. What throws me, Steve, is that for real conservatives, he presents a lot of problems. I mean, people are enamored with his delivery, they're enamored with his bluntness, they're enamored with his non-political correctness. But if they look at his policies, that's where things start to fall apart. I mean, on free market, he supported eminent domain. He supported the 2005 Supreme Court decision that was Kalo versus the City of London, which authorizes the government to take private land for economic development by private investors. He supported Obama in 2009 on the stimulus. He supported the auto bailout. He supported TARP. These are all things that are the antithetical to being a Republican and being a conservative, well, not being a rhino Republican, but to being a conservative Republican. And I don't think we need a Republican like the Republicans we currently have. I think we need a new kind of Republican, or maybe an old kind of Republican. Same thing with healthcare, Steve. He's advocated for universal healthcare similar to the Canadian system. People in Canada wait 9 months to see a doctor. They come to the United States whenever they can financially afford to do that. On Social Security, he's opposed to in any way reforming Medicare or Social Security, but he says he can fund it because he knows where to get the money and nobody else does, which is typical of what he says about problems, that he's got the answer, but nobody else does. And maybe he does, but he hasn't made it known yet. And in the meantime, all these people are rallying to his side and in support of him because of his persona, not because of his policies. Just before I turn it over to you, Steve, he also supports mandatory unions. I mean, it's inconceivable to me that people who want to see a real change in government are looking at him policy-wise as a serious candidate. Now, let's talk about, are they really looking at him policy-wise? Because I don't think that's the lure, the attraction. And I don't think that's where most people are who support him. I don't think they could tell you what his policies are other than immigration and the VA and the border. So, Steve, I'd like to hear what you have to say from how you see it.
I think he is actually the most fascinating guy out there. I'll say I'm going to agree with you. I'm not a fan of his policies, but I'll tell you this. The economy is in horrendous shape. The market, there is 90 million people that are not in the workforce. The unemployment rate, as said by the government, is only 5%. How is it possible with 95 million people out of work that the economy only has an unemployment rate of 5%? It is impossible because the government is cooking the books. And so what Donald Trump represents to the party is the following. We have literally politicians going around and saying that the, you know, as nobody's willing to say that the emperor has no clothes. And here's a guy saying, listen, listen, CNBC, MSNBC, the economy sucks. It blows. Everybody knows it blows, but the government won't report it, nor will the media. But I'm here to tell you the government the economy blows, and I'm going to fix it. And finally, somebody says, yes, oh, my God, he's actually saying what the truth is. The economy blows. That's number one. Number two, what people are pissed off about is this whole issue of illegal immigration. Illegal immigration is flooding the borders. I mean, people are sick of it. There's illegal immigrants everywhere. So everybody knows it's a problem, but the media does not address it, nor do the politicians. So all of a sudden you have a guy now hitting the second button. Yes, we have a problem with illegal immigration. Let's fix the problem. And the third problem, and the third issue is that we have a political class that just addresses the issues in the most polite and the most political forms, and not doesn't really have the language of the common man. And so Trump, for all his money, has the ability to tap into those common feelings of the common man. And I think it comes from the fact that he grew up around construction and actually builds buildings, which actually he's been a creator. So he might have all these flaws on a philosophical bent, and people are willing to overlook it because he's addressing three of the major concerns. And the final one, as you just mentioned, is the VA. The military is absolutely, the military veteran, let's be very clear, is absolutely furious about how they've been treated, number one, by their government, and number two, when they get back, they're finally realizing how their government treats them and how they've been discarded. And all of a sudden, the guy doesn't really have to say much more than that, but he's speaking to them directly what the problems are. And people are willing to overlook those issues because he's addressing an issue that everybody knows exists.
So I agree with you 100% that he's identifying and calling it. He's identifying the problem, and he's calling out the people who, A, created the problem, and B, perpetuate the problem. However, and I hate this analogy, but it's the best one I've got. People in Germany were downtrodden from World War I. Their economy was in the dumper. Their national image was in the dumper. And they were starving. And Hitler said, I'm going to give you food. I'm going to give you back your pride. I'm going to build us back up the way we were before World War I. And yes, he was identifying the problem. And he blamed the victors of World War I for causing Germany's shame and getting them to where they were before World War II. But it's not enough to identify the problem. That's a certain kind of courage. I'll give him that. However, once you do that, you also have to take the second look. And you have to say, okay, he gets the problem. What's his solution? Because if it's just I get the problem, then it's hope and change. And the only time you wake up to the wrong solution is 8 years later. And so many people went into 08 not knowing who this guy was. We know who Donald Trump is. He's not an act. He is who he appears to be. He's egocentric. He's used to being the boss. He calls it like it is. That's all great under certain circumstances. But can he actually implement? Does he have the ability to delegate? You can. It's not a dictatorship. He's used to a dictatorship. You know, two things today, and then I want to share with you why I'm so concerned about Donald Trump. Number one, today, whether or not you know it, he hedged on Planned Parenthood, on public funding for Planned Parenthood. And Lila Rose, who is the founder of Live Action, who is that young woman who founded that pro-abortion movement, Lila Rose called him out and said, there's no way you saw those videos, because if you saw those videos and you still think it's okay to government fund Planned Parenthood for their health services as opposed to their abortion services, then you're blind to who Planned Parenthood is, number one. Number two, I got a fundraising email today from Donald Trump. Now, as I recall, this guy said he didn't need money. He could fund his own campaign. I got a fundraising letter today from Donald Trump for President Incorporated asking me for $5, $10, $25, or $100, but if I could, $1,000, $2,000, $5,000. So what's true in that regard? You could say, well, he didn't realize what the cost was going to be. But again, it's that bravado. You know, I listened to Mark Levin, I think it was. It might have been Glenn Beck. It was some talk show host this week who said, Donald Trump really is who he appears to be. I met him. This was the talk show host talking, not me. I met him, he said. The first time I met him was at some cocktail party event, whatever. I got introduced to him, and the first thing he said to me was, Trump said to him was, see that guy standing over there? He's Italian. He's from Italy. He's the biggest entrepreneur. He's the wealthiest Italian businessman. I know him. He's got a new Ferrari. You want to see his Ferrari? I mean, this is who the guy really is. I don't see that as a presidential temperament, as a presidential mindset. And the reason I'm so concerned is because I was raised by an entrepreneur. My father was a self-educated multimillionaire. He didn't go beyond high school. He did it all himself. He started a business, the first security system, a burglar and fire alarm business in the United States, first residential burglar and fire alarm company. My father was a one-man show. He never incorporated. He was a sole proprietor. He had employees. The union could never get to his employees. They tried many times because he was so good to his employees. They didn't want a union. But here's the thing. My father was like Donald Trump. It was his way or the highway, in business and not in business. If you didn't agree with my father, you were just stupid. You couldn't possibly have an idea that wasn't his own. He was hugely charitable. He was probably the most charitable man I ever met and ever will in my lifetime. I could do several podcasts on miraculous stories of what my father did for people in his lifetime. But that doesn't change the fact that he was essentially a dictator. He was an entrepreneur who was used to doing it his own way. He didn't suffer fools lightly, but he also didn't take any advice from anyone else, and he steamrolled over you when you were in his way. That's what concerns me. That's the perspective. That's my personal experience with this kind of personality who is self-made and who is used to doing it his own way. Now, let me throw this in astrologically. Here's a laugh. Astrologically, my father was a Scorpio, and that's very much a Scorpio personality. Donald Trump happens to be a Gemini. Let me tell you, as a mystic and an intuitive myself, what the take is on Gemini men. They're little boys in big suits. They never really grow up. They're like kids very much, in the sense that they're somewhat unconstrained and want to play it their way or no way. And so I am really concerned, not because of his astrological sign, I don't want to sound completely off the deep end here, concerned about the personality in the office of the presidency. I am delighted that he has raised these issues. I am concerned that he will spoil the field for a potential presidential candidate who could help this country. I'm not sure he can.
Well, there's two issues I want to address. The first one, I think your analogy is relevant. I don't think it's pertinent here because the fact of the matter is Trump is offering solutions, business solutions, to get the economy growing again. He, clearly what he has spoken about is not more government intervention, but less. And so I think that's an analogy that, I mean, is very pertinent. I mean, I forget which president say, but the business of America is business. And most Americans know that. So the economy needs to get going again, and that's really what Trump is offering. He's not offering government solutions to get into people's pocketbooks. What he's offering is to get out of people's pocketbooks and get the economy going again so people can make more money. So I think that's a very different scenario than what happened, from your analogy. The second thing is, I'm not disagreeing with you on his temperament, but I think what's happened is the following. In the debates, I watched the debate afterwards, and there was a lot of questions, and I want to really be specific on Megyn Kelly. There's two points. When Bret Baier asked them to all raise their hands to see who would, if you were not elected, would you support?
If you were not nominated.
Exactly. I mean, first of all, these are not little boys, and they're not in a classroom. These are all grown men, and why are they treating them like little boys? I thought it was completely inappropriate. That's the first thing. And so I thought there was an element of trying to reduce the Republicans to childhood kids. And that's number one. Number two, you know what? Our country needs a robust debate about candidates who can win an election. And if our country can't handle robust debate about who should be president, then we're not a very, you know, we deserve the leaders that we get. So Trump is basically saying to the political parties, hey, I'm a viable candidate, and what you're trying to do is you're trying to relegate me into something else that I'm not. I'm a viable candidate, and I want to be treated as a viable candidate, which I think is, for all due respect, that's what he wants. And if you're not going to treat me this way, then I have a problem with the Republican Party. The Republican Party has not been fair to the people. They have not. I mean, Carol, we just had an election, and the Republicans haven't done anything to counteract Obama. It was one of the largest midterm election losses by a president in the House, and there's been no change in the governance of our country. So that's the second thing. And the third final thing was the way that Megyn Kelly, the way that he asked him the question about how he treated women. So let's be clear. Donald Trump has been in business for many years. He's had products, clothing lines, buildings. I mean, there's never been a complaint at all about how he treats women. Never been a complaint. And all of a sudden, Megyn Kelly comes up with this ridiculous notion back in the Republican Party of this war on women. So are we having now we're having this fictional war on women to kick Donald Trump and to disparage him, to get him out of the Republican Party or make him look bad in the Republican Party? I thought it was completely inappropriate that they would ask him that question. And I would say even more importantly, the issue that he didn't touch on, that Megyn Kelly, you know, didn't touch on. But the fact of the matter is the leading candidate on the Democrat side, right, is Hillary Clinton, whose husband was accused of rape, was a serial philanderer, was, you know, sexually assaulted an intern in the White House, and she was his biggest proponent and biggest defender. So I find it ludicrous that the analogy that Donald Trump is somehow misogynistic and against women, when the Democratic prime candidate to be the president has been the defender of misogynistic behavior by her husband. So all those things, I think, frustrate the American people. They're finally waking up that this is not fair to treat candidates this way. And I think Trump is addressing the fact that, you know what, you better start addressing me as a serious candidate. And if you are, then I think he'd behave. But I don't think the way that he's being treated now, I think it could line up for a third-party run.
Well, in terms of him being pro-business, you know, the website Conservative Review rates every member of Congress on whether they are conservative. Their entire voting record is there for you to see, and their positions are there for you to see at Conservative Review. Conservative Review is also now rating the candidates that are running for the Republican Party nomination. And they rate Donald Trump red. Red is the worst. There's red, green, and yellow. Yellow is middle of the road, green is good, and red is awful. They rate him red on free market. Because despite the fact, you have to understand, number one, when you say he's pro-business, you can't be pro-business and anti-government if you favor eminent domain. Eminent domain is the government's permission to take private property away from someone in order to give it to a private company to build upon for commercial use or whatever use they want. Eminent domain is the seizing of private property without cause, without cause. And so the fact that he could be for eminent domain is simply because he's a builder. And there has been land which he has seized through using eminent domain without regard for who he took it from or what it did to them, because he was about to make more money in his business deal. I don't resent him making money or being a successful builder. I resent him using eminent domain to do it and to support eminent domain as a policy and as a legal remedy. That's number one. Number two, the whole thing with Megyn Kelly, there's enough blame to go around there on all sides. I don't think there's anything like a war on women that relates to Donald Trump. He has a lot of women in positions and executive positions within his companies. His wives have nothing bad to say about him. They tried to have Ivana say something bad about him, and she came out in support of it. What I think is they're painting him with a broad brush. I think he has a crude sense of humor. I think that's his crime. I don't think he's misogynistic. I think he has a crude sense of humor, and I think he lacks some social boundaries when it comes to how he expresses his anger or his displeasure or when he attempts to be condescending and dictatorial. I don't think he hates women. I think he would humiliate a man the same way he would humiliate a woman. I think he is gender neutral on that. I just think it's his sense of humor and his lack of social graces and social boundaries. The other thing is that in terms of his anger, you think he will settle down, I think you said. I think that there are times when a candidate and certainly a president has to appear to be angry, has to appear to be as if they're going to snap and you better get, you know, with the program. I don't know that Donald Trump can turn that off and on. I think that the moment he's pushed or threatened in any way, and I think there's a lot of insecurity there in the personality, in the psyche, which is where a lot of the bravado comes from and the need to have Trump on everything. That's an ego issue that usually has an underlying insecurity issue. I think that his reactive self is not presidential. It's a necessary quality for a president to be able to access, but I don't think it's a good pattern of behavior, and it's how I always see him the moment. It doesn't take anything to flip him. The slightest challenge to his success rate, to his wealth, to his persona, he immediately becomes hostile and begins to aggrandize himself, if you can use that word in that sentence in that way, and to then go after the person like Megyn Kelly. I thought her behavior was really poor, and I thought her questioning of him was definitely hostile. However, to spend 3 days calling her a bimbo, a lightweight, and not a very important anchor, she's a brilliant woman. She's a deadly interviewer. She's as sharp as they come, and she's been Roger Ailes' number one go-to person on Fox. He's been grooming her for 10 years at least at Fox, and she is Fox News. So the fact that he needed to keep doing that, Steve, is what concerns me. It's one of the things about him that concerns me. You're right. We need a look. I am not a Republican. Don't get me wrong. To the list, independent, and I used to be a Democrat for most of my adult life, and I've never been a registered Republican, and both parties are completely corrupted. But when you've got somebody like a Carly Fiorina who's never been in politics, or you've got a Ted Cruz who's only been in it for, what, two years in the Senate? Or you've got, who's the other one? There's somebody, Ben Carson. When you've got people who aren't politicians, but they're not getting the attention, they're not getting center stage, you are potentially losing out on quality leadership because somebody knows how to steal the mic. And I'm grateful to him for raising the issues, but I don't know that he's the guy I want solving the problems. Or make him Secretary of Commerce. Or make him Secretary of Commerce. That's his thing. He's a businessman.
You're right, but they're two separate issues, right? But why is he gaining the traction? Because he's addressing the issues. He's the only one that's out in the forefront addressing the issues. So he's, because he addresses the issues, he gets the mic. He gets the stage. Where's been everybody else to address the issues? And so as soon as he goes out and addresses the issues, he gets attacked like that. You're right. What your point about Megyn Kelly is absolutely right. She's been groomed, right? So, you know, it's one of those things that her line of questioning becomes more abhorrent, more deviant, knowing where it's coming from. That she knows better. She knows the game. She knows exactly how it's played. She knows how serious the stakes are for our country. And she resorts to the lowest of lowest questioning that we expect from the worst of CNN, the worst of MSNBC. We were given that to us by Fox News, by supposedly the best and the brightest. So it makes no sense unless there's some sort of calculated, you know, notion to get rid of this guy. So the other thing that I find was fascinating, it was Roger Ailes. You're right. Trump does, in fact, down. And I will say this. All great men or anybody who achieves greatness has a flaw in them because it's that flaw that drives them because they do think they're flawed. So you're right. I do think Trump is flawed. And that's part of his greatness and part of his fallacy. But getting back to this issue of Megyn Kelly, I found it fascinating that, you know, Megyn Kelly didn't back down and neither did Trump. And what did Roger Ailes do? He called up and he called up Trump. And what did he say? You will be treated fairly by Fox. What prompted Roger Ailes to even make that phone call? Because obviously he's not an idiot. He realized that that Trump was treated unfairly. So again, I think the backdrop is fascinating, and it makes no sense to me, the questioning of Megyn Kelly. And lastly, I'm not disagreeing with you on some of Trump's policies about eminent domain and some of his other policies. I'm not disagreeing with you there. What I'm saying to you is, and I'm not here to defend Trump on those issues because I agree with you. I think eminent domain is a horrific use of government resources to steal people's property. So I'm not here to defend that policy, but what I do want to get back to is just the fact that Trump is making himself noticed because he's addressing the issues. That's it.
Okay. All right. Well, we're almost out of time, but there's a backstory on the Ailes-Trump call, and it's that yes, Ailes called him, but from what I heard, there's only one person Donald Trump's afraid of, and that's Roger Ailes. And I heard that call was most likely Ailes saying to him, knock it off. It's been 3 days on Megyn Kelly. We'll treat you fairly going forward. Knock it off, Donald. That's the version that I heard from people who allegedly know both men and say Ailes knows how to deal with Trump and Trump is afraid of Ailes. I don't know why that is. But so be careful because Donald on it that, you know, Ailes called me, which gives the impression to everybody that Ailes was the capitulator. But that's not what I'm hearing from people who know both of them, likely how the conversation went. And so now Trump is off of the issue of Kelly because he was told to knock it off. And I don't know, I still am not comfortable with who got Trump into this, who he's got allegiance to. He's historically tied to the Clintons. I don't know who's pulling the strings here. I don't know who the puppets are, and I think it's early in the game for any of us to know. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Thanks for listening. We'll continue to keep you posted with everything we know, and hopefully we'll keep you informed to the best of our ability. The rest of it is all up to you. Thanks for listening. I'm Carol Gold.
I'm Steve Clark.
We'll be back here again on Thursday evening. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Above the Fray with Carol Gold and Steve Clark, from politics to the divine. Thanks for being a part of a new way to see the world. Visit our website at AboveTheFrayPodcast.com and like us on our Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/AboveTheFrayPodcast. This has been Carol Gold and Steve Clark, taking you always above the fray.